Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
This is D.L. Hudson. Welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. I've got Bill Donahue, president of the Catholic League, on the phone from New York about a very urgent matter that is soon to come to a head in at the White House and the Congress about the National Endowment for the Arts, whether or not it will even exist if President Trump gets what he wants. He wants, in fact, to eliminate it. But if he doesn't eliminate it, who's going to be the new chairman? Who's going to lead the National Endowment for the Arts, especially at a time when the National Endowment has been funding some rather anti-Catholic, well, I should say very anti-Catholic screeds. Bill, tell our listeners what's going on.
Yes, you know, back about 15 years ago, there was a musical, a play called Jerry Springer the Opera. It made its way over to Scotland and into England. It played in the West End of London for quite a while. It was, even by the recognition of the people in England, who tend to be much more secular than they are in the United States, as a vile, obscene, anti-Christian, beyond belief play. And it drew a big round of protest, some in the street. They couldn't believe the BBC was actually promoting itself. Now, I want the listeners to know, Jerry Springer, of course, is not a model of morality, but even Jerry Springer himself said, I had nothing to do with this. This is a play, a musical based off of my show, admittedly. He said it was somewhat well done in some respects. We would take issue with that. But he said, I would never go out there and bash somebody else's religion. That's not where I'm coming from. I would not show such great insensitivity. Now, it stayed over in England, this play. I can get into some of it here in just a sec. And it's so gross that I cannot and will not speak about it in any exact terms on the radio show. You could go to the Catholic League website at catholicleague.org and find what we've written about Jerry Springer the Opera, and you'll see a summary which I've written about it and the reviews which basically punctuate what I'm saying. But they were going to bring it to New York around the middle part of the first decade of this millennia, and over my protest, they kept it out. Then they ran it for two nights, the end of January, around 2005 or so, but that was it. And I did get Bank of America and others to protest, and they were one of the sponsors. Now, we didn't hear anything more about it until more recently. In the earlier part, going back to the end of last year, we learned that there's a place called, there's a production company called The New Group. The New Group is a small production company which produces off-Broadway plays. There's a theater called the Pershing Theater over by the Port Authority bus terminal in New York City. It's an off-Broadway site. So they decided to bring it there, and that's when I began to look into this with my staff, to see if there's any kind of connection with public funding. Don't get me wrong, I would protest it even if it was all private funding. It's that vile. What they say about Jesus, the Virgin Mary, the Eucharist, the Mass, the crucifixion, every aspect of our religion is trashed in a most obscene possible way, and things that are done on stage that are rather remarkable. But when I found out that there's a connection with the National Endowment of the Arts, which funds not the opera, it funds the production company, the new group. That's when I decided to do something about it.
In fact, it provides a substantial portion of their funding, correct?
Well, the majority of the money that goes to the new group comes from public funds. The largest donation comes at the federal level, the National Endowment for the Arts. And then it gets money from a New York City and a New York State group that also deal with funding for the arts. But if you took away the public funding, and the largest donor being the federal one, the NEA, National Endowment for the Arts, it would collapse. And then they're taking this. Of course, they're going to say, you know, well, we didn't fund the opera per se. That's like, that's the Planned Parenthood game deal.
Yeah.
That's saying, well, we don't get federal money for abortions. No, you only get federal money that comes into Planned Parenthood. And you're not using this, you're using this money, of course, to support your abortion clinic efforts, even if it doesn't directly fund them.
Well, when the new group applied for its latest grant, it surely had to put in its proposal what plays and musicals it was going to produce.
Well, it played a game. It put in some, there's a play about the Wiggly or something, then it asked money for that. But my point is this, if they weren't getting fairly lavish checks from the federal government, as well as the state and local government in New York, they wouldn't exist. They're taking the money that they make from these other plays, and then they can use it to fund the operations. I mean, somebody's got to pay for the electricity, the utilities, the rent, everything else that goes forward here. And you know, just like when they had the one with Andre Serrano, he put the crucifix in a jar of his own urine, that money was indirectly funded. It didn't make any difference to the critics, and it shouldn't at that time. That money went to for a Virginia tour, and he was part of that tour. So the question is there money, whether it's direct or indirect, is irrelevant to me. We know one thing. If there were no public funds whatsoever to this place called the New Group, this production company, it would cease to exist, and we wouldn't have this problem.
Well, you and I were in a press conference yesterday in Washington, D.C., at the National Press Club, where Ralph Reed, head of the Faith and Freedom Coalition, and Brent Buzzell of the Media Research Council, and myself, addressed in more detail what is so revolting, not only about the play or the musical. They call it an opera. It's really a musical. And particularly the fact that what is so revolting is being paid for with our dollars, our taxpayer dollars.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for showing up yesterday. As I was glad to mention, your role in the Morley Institute for the Culture and Church, Crisis Magazine, the Christian Review Today, and your authorship, this radio show, and, of course, let me do a little bragging for you. You were the point man, the number one point man in the administration of George W. Bush as the liaison to the Catholic community. And so you've got a distinguished record. Certainly Ralph Reed, one of the most important evangelical voices in the United States, first with the Christian Coalition, now bigger than and better than ever before, the Faith and Freedom Coalition. His outreach to the evangelical community is absolutely startling. And Brent Buzzell of the Media Research Center, which hosts also Newsbusters, and he's got CNSNews.com, television personality. He's been out there as an activist for a lot of different causes. To have you three there to join me in this means a great deal to me. It should mean a great deal to the listeners, and now it means a great deal to the President of the United States.
Well, you sent a letter to him today.
Yes.
And what basically did you ask President Trump to do?
Well, see, this is just it. People say, well, you got to identify the problem. Number one is this vicious assault on Christian sensibilities. Second problem is that it's largely a result of public funding led by the National Endowment for the Arts for the production company, even if it's not for the play. And then thirdly, we got to ask, well, okay, what do you want to do about it? President Trump, to his credit, asked the Senate and the House not to fund the NEA anymore because of its past problems, such as this, with Mapplethorpe and Serrano and some other ugly things that have happened in the past. Both the House and the Senate, listeners should know, disagreed with him. They overrode him, and they decided to put in funding, not a whole lot different from what it was in previous years, for the National Endowment for the Arts. So having lost on that just recently, I'm still not opposed to cutting the federal funds for the arts, But having lost on that one, and the president did give it his best shot, I took a different tact. The current chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts was appointed by President Obama some 4 years ago. Her term is up in April. It was in February, 4 years ago, when Obama made his announcement as to who his nominee would be. The person has to be approved by the Senate. Therefore, it stands to reason that President Trump will soon be nominating, assumedly next month, his nominee to succeed the current chairman and taking over the reins on April the 12th. So my request is rather modest. All I want is a pledge by the president to nominate someone who will no longer fund anti-Christian grantees, that would be the new group, as well as exhibitions and performances. And knowing that the president wanted to cut the funding precisely because of these kind of vile attacks in the past, I have little doubt that he will be in strong agreement and do the right thing. But I do want listeners to know that we will be releasing, well, I'm not going to have one person there in the White House. Lots of us have contacts. All of us, Brent Bozell, you, Deal Hudson, Ralph Reed, myself, Bill Donahue, we've got various contacts. Some are the same, some are different. We want to get the message out because we know it's hard to get up the pipeline to the President of the United States. But we want to use all of our contacts to make sure that this letter and our voice from what happened yesterday, the two of them together, that, and we're providing the president with the script and the summary and the whole bit, that this will get to him so he can make a decision to appoint someone who's responsible, who's ethical, and whose taste is not to offend Christians. And by the way, I'm not interested in offending any demographic group. I'm choosing Christians because we're the Catholic League, and that's our primary interest. But we don't think that this should be federal funding that deliberately and viciously assaults any demographic group. That should not be.
Well, evidently, the National Endowment for the Arts is very aware of what you're up to, what happened at the press conference yesterday, because didn't they contact you already?
Well, actually, they didn't contact me. They did contact people over at CNSNews.com. That's the Brent Bozell communications arm. I will be writing to the chairman tomorrow to follow up with the president today. I'll deal with her tomorrow respond to these questions. And they're trying to say, well, the money didn't go directly to Jerry Springer. Well, again, the Planned Parenthood analogy is apt.
Right.
The money goes to the institution without which, if they didn't get these monies, would not be able to do what they do. In the case of Planned Parenthood, of course, it's running an abortion bill.
That's like saying if you buy an omelet, you didn't pay for the eggs.
Well, that's about it, yeah. And you're not helping to support any operation that's attendant to it. We all live in the real world. We understand what this is about. And if there's any doubt about it, can anyone imagine that the NEA would indirectly fund a gay-bashing play?
Never.
And then tell the gay community, well, it's indirectly funded? Oh, that's okay. That's fine. Now, it's indirect, so it's one step removed. No, that doesn't work. It doesn't fly with gays. It doesn't fly with Jews, blacks, Muslims, and everybody else. And it's certainly not going to fly with Catholics and with the entire Christian community. Look,
well, I think, Bill, we do have to give our listeners a little more detail about how egregious Jerry Springer the Opera is, so that when they talk to other people about it, they have something that they can tell them that's concrete. And so, could you share a couple of the specific items?
Well,
by the way, I watched the whole thing. The whole thing is vile from beginning to end, 2 hours
of it. Besides the fact that they're fondling the Jesus character's genitals on
stage. Eve fondles Jesus' genitals.
That's right. And then you've got the F word, supposedly, according to the Daily Mail in England, used over 8,000 times. 8,000 times using the F word.
Well, I think
at our religion.
Bill, I looked that up. That's a little bit of an exaggeration, but I will say this, that I don't think more than 2 minutes of the musical goes by without hearing the F word, plus everything else.
Right, exactly. And now, listen, if it was just vulgar, we would be opposed to it, but when the obscenities are directed at the crucifixion, at the Virgin Mary, raped by an angel, that's what they sing, that she's raped by an angel, when you thrash the Eucharist in the Mass, we know where they're going with this. And it's in the second half of the play. By the way, listeners who want to look at this, you can Google into YouTube and other sources, Jerry Springer the Opera, put in Jerry Springer the Opera DVD or the performance, and you can, you know, after a little bit of time, you'll be able to access.
No, it comes right up. There's an entire two-hour BBC production. I had the courage and patience to watch the whole thing. And as I said in the press conference yesterday, judging it just as a work of art, it's horrific. The music is lousy. The jokes are dumb. As I said, this is like getting a bunch of 10th graders drunk and asking them to spend a weekend writing a Broadway show. This is what
and
they
I'd
would
like
come
to,
up with.
In here in just a minute or two to expand more on that, because you probably have the greatest artistic credentials of any of the four speakers who were there yesterday. But I want to address something here in terms of the thematic. We could give you specific examples of, which I'm not going to use the language, but I could give you even more concrete examples behaviorally of what was done. But, you know, somebody might say, well, to what end? Yes, you're right, it's an adolescent rant, but they know what they're doing. When they end the play by stating really the premise of it, which is moral nihilism, they say nothing is right and nothing is wrong. There are no such thing as good and evil. There are no absolutes. Now, as I pointed out yesterday, that is precisely what Adolf Hitler said. He said there's no such thing as truth. There's no such thing as right and wrong. There are no absolutes. Once you accept that proposition, there's nothing that can't be done in the name of freedom and liberty, because there's no axis, there's no anchor, there's no monitor, there's no Ten Commandments grounded in Scripture. It's just a matter of willy-nilly opinion, which is why Hitler had an opinion too. So did slave masters in another era. Once you accept that kind of moral relativism, every evil is possible and can be justified as possible, which is why they showed the Ku Klux Klan in a favorable light, dancing away on stage. They also wanted to attack not just God, they attacked nature's God, nature as well as God. So, for example, they would show naked woman with her breast exposed with male genitalia. What's that about? They're making a statement. There's no such thing as male, no such thing as female. It's not binary. Everything is interchangeable. There's no such thing as right, no such thing as wrong. This is a prescription for moral anarchy, people. And of course, the topper is you just can't be a moral nihilist unless you're going to annihilate the heart of the culture. The heart of our culture remains, battered though it is, the Judeo-Christian ethos. Our Judeo-Christian heritage is assaulted by Jerry Springer the Opera, funded by the NEA, in the sense of being the money going to the production company. And that's why this is why I held the press conference and why I've written to the President of the United States, and we're going to push all the buttons that we can.
By the way, Bill, one thing
to continue, we're just a doormat for these cultural fascists.
You know, I figured out after our press conference yesterday that the National Endowment for the Arts was created in 1965. Its funding steadily grew to 1992 when it got $170,000. If it had continued to grow from 1992 to today, it would have been something like $400 million or $500 million, half a billion dollars. But it didn't grow because along the way, Congress cut deeply into the NEA budget because of the exact same kind of thing that you're talking about. So they really are shooting themselves in the foot.
Well, they are. It is a credit to our side for pushing back that we got something. You know, I'm not one of these people who says, well, since you didn't get everything, therefore you lost. I think that's a loser's way to proceed in life, quite frankly. If you're a realist, as an activist, and running an organization, as I've run organizations and you've run organizations, you know where you get what you can get. You take what you can get, and then you go forward, and then you try to get more until you succeed. That's what we do. And, yes, it could have actually been worse, but every time they've run into trouble, it's because of this arrogance, and I think they tried to slip this one in because it was an off-Broadway site, located over by the bus terminal in New York City. It's only there for a couple of months, and so we can probably swing by with it. But no, when you're using public funds, and this is my principle, which I want the listeners to understand. It's a very simple principle. If it's wrong to take public monies to promote religion, why is it acceptable to take public monies to bash it?
Right. And by the way, Bill, you know, I want to tell our listeners, I know this guy for a long, long time. He's no prude. He's not anti the arts at all. But he always goes after what is truly vile, what is vicious, and what is intended to bash our faith. He doesn't go after things that are, you know, typical banter about Catholicism or Christianity or any religion. He goes after what is intended as a vicious attack.
And let me just follow up. You're absolutely right. We do not go over the small fry potato stuff, and we don't go after, you know, some dump in Soho or an artistic gallery outside of Seattle nobody ever heard of, the functional equivalent of a public access TV. When in doubt, we throw it out. If it's borderline, we don't address it. If it's a quip that we don't like, we tend to ignore it. But we see a pattern. On television, that would be Bill Maher. As recently as, again,
right,
last Friday night. There's a pattern of abuse, and it's intentional, it's not a mistake, it's scripted. That is something, when you get the more egregious examples, such as Jerry Springer of the Opera, that's when we kick into action. We don't go after the small fry stuff. We don't want to look silly on that. But if we didn't object to Jerry Springer of the Opera, we might as well close our doors, which is precisely what the other side wants us to do. So they can call us the censors. So you can have, for example, Richard Thomas, one of the creators of the play, came out and said that the people who criticize us are, quote, ignorant and bigoted. We're ignorant and bigoted for objecting to a play which thrashes in the most obscene possible way our religion? Yet, it's interesting, John Rando, the director, he came out and admitted that, yes, it is sacrilegious. Well, if it's sacrilegious, then it can't be non-judgmental, can it? And we know what kind of judgment they made. I mean, I'd rather a guy like Rando, who says it is vulgar and it is sacrilegious, at least he tells the truth, than someone like Richard Thomas and Stuart Lee, who try to pretend that, oh, no, no, it's fine, and you got to be a bigot to object to it.
And those are the composer and the lyricist.
Right.
I almost hesitate to use the word lyricist.
Yeah.
Because it denotes something beautiful. I mean, one of the refrains throughout the musical is...
You spoke eloquently yesterday about just on the artistic merits of it. Why don't you recast that a little bit for the listeners?
Well, I would say this, that first of all...
Artistic statement.
I'm a Broadway show freak. I have been since I was in high school. I've got them all memorized, all the great shows. And there's not a single song, tune, melody, refrain, anything in this musical that you can remember because it's all a dud. There's a supposedly big duet moment toward the end of the musical when Satan and Christ, and of course Christ is wearing a diaper at that point, have this duet. It's called a vocalese. They don't use any words. They just, you know, sing a vowel sound. And supposedly they're showing off how great their voices are. And the melodic line goes nowhere. And then when they pause for clapping, nobody clapped. And they had to like hurry on because they had to basically try to hide the fact that nobody fell for it.
Well, you know, that itself should be telling. And I know you're making a comment here independent of the content of the play, and as an apt statement, that even on that artistic level, that it's a failure, which raises even further questions about why the National Endowment of the Arts would want to be associated with giving money to the new group. And by the way, if you go into Cherry Navigator, okay, which does a kind of a, it's not always accurate, but it's some kind of a bellwether about, you know, nonprofit organizations and whether they're following certain kinds of expectations and the like. And if you go into the new group, this is exactly what it says. Why this organization, why isn't this organization rated? The organization is not eligible to be rated by Charity Navigator because, as a service for individual givers, we only rate organizations that depend on support from individual contributors and foundations. Organizations such as this that get most of their revenue from the government or from program services are therefore ineligible to be rated. So there we have it right there. Even Charity Navigator is agreeing with us on this issue. It's not even a matter of a question here. That's just how far gone this organization
did
is.
Have you told our listeners yet who the audience, the intended audience for this New York?
Yeah, as one of the creators admitted, he said the people who are upset about Brexit and Trump, they're the ones who will like this play.
And isn't it interesting that they're...
The anti-Trump mentality that's out there, that some of them at least, appeals to hate and malice.
The haters. Their audience is the haters.
Exactly. So that's just it. By the way, I want to say something else, too, about the NEA. And I'm going to write to the NEA chairman next, because they lied. I didn't say they made a mistake. We all make mistakes. I said they lied. In their, I have it right in front of me. You can go to the NEA site and find out, what we do not fund, and they have guidelines. The third one says general operating or seasonal support. Yet in 2009, it gave $50,000 to the new group, the production company, behind Jerry Springer, the
Oscar. I missed that. That is huge.
Yeah.
They broke their own guidelines.
Quote, to support the preservation of jobs that are threatened by declines in philanthropic and other support during the current economic downturn.
Well, they don't get private funding. So
that's just it. So we have a recession for all kinds of different reasons, which you don't have to get into, that hit the country in 2008, 2009. And what does the federal government through the National Endowment of the Arts do? Come to the rescue of this little outfit in New York City, which private people won't support because it's such a dump.
They're in bed together. That's
I know that. That's exactly it. So that's going to be a centerpiece of my letter there, that they actually lie. That is operating expense. When you give money generally to support you through the economic downturn, and it says, or seasonal. They violated the tenets of their own organization, and this word has to be gotten out of.
Yeah, I mean, that's
they're a bunch of phonies.
Well, and also it's a matter if they're a governmental organization, it's very serious to violate your own regulations. I'm talking to Bill Donahue, president of the Catholic League, about this awful, horrific Broadway musical, Jerry Springer, the Opera, and its public funding for an anti-Catholic message. We'll be back after a moment.
St. Edith Catholic School in Livonia is having an open house on Saturday, January 27th from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. and on Sunday, January 28th from noon to 2. St. Edith Catholic School provides a Catholic Christian environment to nurture the total child in mind, body, and spirit. St. Edith is located on Newburgh Road, just south of 5 Mile Road in Livonia. If you're looking for a strong Catholic school, consider St. Edith in Livonia. Again, their open house is on Saturday, January 27th from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. and on Sunday, January 28th from noon to 2.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I'm Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, God himself took on flesh and submitted himself to his own laws. What other response can we have except that of Elder Simeon? Now you may dismiss your servant, O Lord.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO Ave Maria Radio.
If you've enjoyed Father John Ricardo's gift of teaching and preaching in the past, his new book, Heaven Starts Now, is the book for you. In his inspiring and incisive way, Father John addresses the obstacles we all face in becoming mature disciples. How do we learn to forgive? How do we combat fear and understand suffering? How do we worship the Lord, love others, and surrender our lives to God? How do we become saints day by day? Order online at AveMariaRadio.net under the store tab. That's AveMariaRadio.net under the store tab. Ever thought you'd make a bundle by trading in or selling your used vehicle only to find out it's worth a dinner for two? Well, it's much more valuable to donate your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Thousands of Americans donate their vehicle each year. The donation to Ave Maria is easy, tax-deductible, and supports our efforts to evangelize. A year from now, will you remember that dinner or your gracious and selfless donation? Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Bill Donahue, president of the Catholic League. We're talking about this outrageous musical entitled Jerry Springer the Opera that is being performed, I think, as of today for 2 months in New York City off-Broadway. And the organization, the New Group, gets most of its funding from public sources, and which includes the federal government and the National Endowment for the Arts. Do you think that the New Group is in some way hoping that you're bashing them will bring in an audience?
Well, there's always that possibility, and let me just address that first off, because I've gone through this, and I know you're asking this in a friendly way, but let me ask, because some critics are saying, oh, well, you're just going to draw more attention to the thing. I said, wait, hold on. If, and this gets back to your earlier point, which I followed, which I answered as well, that we don't go after all these small potato kind of things, here's my general rule of thumb. The more establishmentarian the source of the offense, the more likely is we're going to respond. For example, if the source of the offense is Sony, or CBS, or the New York Times, or PBS, those are huge. If it's Bill Maher, big name, that's huge. We cannot pretend that we weren't offended. And if, in fact, you follow the logic that if you make any noise, you're going to draw more attention, then the best way to handle all bigotry is for every single civil rights organization in the country to shut down tomorrow. And then I guess we won't have any Catholic bashing, gay bashing, Jew bashing, Muslim bashing. Every single demographic group has a civil rights organization which exists to fight defamation and discrimination. So, no, of course we have to fight. Is that the risk? So what? We take it. What the alternative is to close our doors, and then we can expect more of the same. Now, if it's a small fry kind of operation, and it's not any big name people, some actors we've never heard of, a production company, an internet blog site that's not well known or something of that nature, we're going to ignore it because they want us to give them attention. I've actually had artists call my office and begging the Catholic League to attack them so they can gin up some attention because nobody pays any attention to them. Now, the New Group, I've never heard of the New Group before last year.
I hadn't either.
No idea.
I had not either.
Okay, now they're off Broadway. All right, that's not the same as Broadway, but it's pretty big here in New York City.
Yes, it is.
If they didn't have the NEA funding, I might just put out a press release. You know, and I wouldn't certainly make the trip to Washington and the expenses and getting the National Press Club and have you and Ralph Reed and Brent Bozell and other people supporting us on this. But when you've got public money, and they get the lion's share of the sources, the New Group, from the public trust, then it seems to me we have no other choice but to deal with it. But, absent public monies, it was totally privately funded. I'd issue a news release statement just to be on record that it's appalling. And I would probably just move on to the next offense that we deal with here.
Well, the analogy I would draw is that Hillary Clinton thought she could beat Donald Trump by appealing to hate.
Yes.
And on and on and on. I mean, I think people like this don't seem to get that the country isn't who they think it is. I mean,
well,
when Jerry Springer himself, who does not represent conservatives, does not represent Republicans, when Jerry Springer himself wants to distance himself from this show that's named after him, I mean, he certainly represents a large segment of the kind of audience that they would expect to come.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. And by the way, on January the 8th at the Guggenheim Museum in New York City, they had a panel discussion with Richard Thomas and Stuart Lee, the two principals behind this in terms of creating this. And I sent two people from the Catholic League, a person here on the staff, Don Lauer, along with the vice president, Bernadette Brady, and just to report back to me the next day what they learned. Now, there wasn't any. There were a couple of skits there. They tried to downplay the worst of it. But it's interesting is that it wasn't a big crowd that was in attendance, but there were some very strange-looking people who were attracted to this kind of thing and giggling like little boys and girls at the little obscenities against the Christians. They thought that was funny, just like a 16-year-old might do, knowing that he's doing something naughty. But these are adults. But this is the kind of mentality. They said the anti-Trump people will like it. In fairness to the anti-Trump people, I know some of them, but they're not crude and vulgar and obscene people. But obviously there is an element. It's not coming from Bill Donahue. I didn't say that. It's coming from the creators. That this was it will appeal to the people who like to bash Trump. Well, then you have to raise yourself the question, why? Well, what is it that you, because Trump obviously represents the midsection of America and traditional morality in terms of the values that we try to support. Why then would you would take great delight in seeing Christianity thrashed? Unless, of course, you were a hater.
I want to set up for our listeners the second part of the musical. Jerry Springer descends into hell. And by that I'm not comparing him to Christ. And he holds a show down there in which the characters from the first part who are on his show on TV, you know, on Earth, show up again down there in different guises. The man who told his girlfriend that it would really turn him on if she treated him literally like a baby, so he's in a diaper. And then he simulates defecating in his diapers. He ends up being the Christ figure.
Yes, that's right.
And then Jerry Springer, who's in hell, is commenting on each character as they come out, and he's trying to do laugh lines in the show, and nobody in the BBC recorded live program was laughing. It was not connecting with the audience.
Which just goes to show you that the motive is just pure malice. And by the way, you talk about the BBC. Listeners should know this. The head of the BBC at the time, when Jerry Springer the Opera debuted in England and put it on the BBC for the country to watch, his name is Mark Thompson. Now, that may not mean much to listeners, but Mark Thompson, he said that the play was not blasphemous. He calls himself a Catholic in England, and he said it was not blasphemous. And yet every fool knows that he was lying about that. Even the people involved in it and the reviewers called it that, and sacrilegious. But Mark Thompson has moved on from the position as the top guy at the BBC. He now runs the New York Times Company. He's the chairman of the New York Times Company.
Perfect fit.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, when he was over there in the BBC, Jimmy Savile, which is one of their leading comedic entertainers for decades, he was raping boys and girls by the score, and people knew about it. It was the biggest scandal that hit England when they get to sexual abuse and dealing with pedophilia in particular. And people finally admitted later on that they knew about it. They did nothing about it. He was having sex in the stairways at the BBC. Mark Thompson said he didn't know anything about it.
Right.
And yet we have proof that he lied to us.
Just like all those actors knew nothing about Harvey Weinstein.
We have proof that he did know about it, because I'm not going to spend my time now talking about him. But people should know, this is at this level of the elites. Okay? We're talking about the top of the BBC, now the top of the New York Times Company, which has ownership over the New York Times. That these are the people that it appeals to. That's why, you know, the term culture wars is kind of exhausted, overused. But what other term can you use? It's a culture war between those people who defend the heritage, the Judeo-Christian heritage upon which this country was crafted, and those who want to destroy it.
And those who...
Now, there's a lot of people in
those who defend
and different people, but there are some people out there who are our foes, and we better realize it.
And those who defend common taste, good taste, and decency, I'll throw that in, because this thing is so perverse, it's so off-putting, it's so boring. And, you know, it's very hard in an artistic production of any time to make Satan dull. I mean, if you look at the history of representations of Satan in literature, such as in Milton's Paradise Lost and in Goethe's Faust, Satan's always a great character, always fascinating, steals the show. But Satan in this show is dull as dirt, and all he does is repeat the same complaint over and over again, the same obscenities.
What really offends me, too, is that in the play, as you know, they have Jesus apologizing to Satan. See,
yeah.
Again, good and evil have switched places.
And, you know, so the attempt to play, you know, to use obscenity in a place where a Broadway musical audience would not expect it, to use echoes of liturgical music in the background in order to emphasize the contrast between the tradition of Christianity and the fact that they're all saying F-U and S-U and all these things, and also making all kind of horrendous gestures, sexual gestures at the same time, it stopped being funny about 2 minutes in. If anyone is the type that will laugh at an incongruity one time, which I would, if you start doing it for 2 hours, it just becomes boring, which this show is.
And if people, again, we're talking here about adults, this is not for kids. I do use a lot of asterisks, but everybody knows what we're talking about here. If you go to the Catholic League website and you type in the search engine, Jerry Springer and the Opera, you'll get that script. And, you know, it's not too long. It's like several pages, probably about a dozen pages. But you'll see examples, select excerpts of that, as well as some of the reviews, which just punctuate what I'm saying, and the statements made by the people associated with this production. I mean, it doesn't leave much to the imagination. The other alternative, of course, is to go into YouTube and type in Jerry Springer the Opera and see if you can access a copy of it. And then, you know, you'll find out that what Dale Hudson is saying, that what I'm saying, we don't exaggerate one iota.
No. We're having to hold back because we would offend listeners if we actually...
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
And by the way, I would like listeners to go on the Catholic League website and download the letter to President Trump and post that letter, if they're on Facebook or on Twitter. Actually get that letter out there as well as the press release from yesterday. The press release describes the blasphemy of the show. The letter describes the request that Bill Donahue and all of us make, that if the NEA is going to continue and it's going to be funded, it should be headed by someone responsible, such as Dana Gioia, who was the chair between 2003 and 2006, and who did a great job. And by the way, all the programs that NEA brags about in terms of responding to you are the shows that Dana Gioia created.
Well, that's interesting in itself. And by the way, let me just follow up on what you just said there. If listeners go to the Catholic League website, the lead one right on the home page is the appeal to the president. If you click on that, you'll see the actual letter that I wrote, and you can you'll also know that if you go into the website and just write Jerry Springer the Opera, it says in the letter, enclosed is, obviously you're not going to put an enclosure up on a website, but that enclosure is the Jerry Springer the Opera, that script summary, that several-page document that we have released to the public, that you can see for yourself certain excerpts from this incredible assault on our sensibilities.
Well, the best person I know who should be the new chair is me, but since I'm not going to be the new chair, I think we should look at the example of Dana Gioia, and I made a mistake. It was 2003-2009. He actually served under President Obama, who liked what he was doing, because he was being middle of the road in the best way. In the best way. You know, on the one hand, he did a program for jazz, which has African-American roots. On the other hand, he did a program for veterans. He did a program for, you know, Shakespeare and for literacy. He really had the sense of how to spend that money in a way that really makes everybody happy.
Oh, it can be done. There's no question about it. Look, we grew up at a time listening to comedy on television, none of which was filthy, and all of it...
The Honeymooners.
Much of it was just pure good fun,
yeah,
to make people laugh. You don't have to get into the gutter in order to be comedic. But unfortunately, in our society today, that's the fastest way that these people can make a name for themselves. And then they wind up like Louis C.K., a basket case. And you know, this is not a healthy sign for our society.
I mean, they sort of figured out 100,000 ways to say the F word, which is about all they can do. When I think of watching the Honeymooners, and I've watched most of the Honeymooners with my 21-year-old son, who I adopted at age 4 from Romania, and we just laugh out loud all the way through those shows. I Love Lucy, the same thing. Yeah. We don't have those anymore. We don't have laugh out loud shows. We have shows, comedy shows, that are pushing lesbianism, transsexualism, homosexuality. We have comedy shows that don't even attempt to disguise their political, moral, religious agenda.
No, you've got these foul-mouthed people like Sarah Silverman and Bill Maher and their ilk. But it is astonishing. You can't even repeat what they're saying. It's so bad. Even a show, I think, of more recent vintage, which was a major, major smashing success as a comedy show, which for the most part stayed within the bounds which I think are traditional, and that's Seinfeld.
Right. He did. But that show's been gone a long time, Bill.
It has been. It has been gone for a long time. And I'm hard-pressed to come up with one that of more recent vintage that was of that kind of parallel success that didn't have to get into the gutter.
I can't think of any.
No.
I mean, a lot of people liked Modern Life, but it had a very strong gay agenda.
Louis C.K. is one of the tops in the country. Of course, now that we found out about his problems, that won't be the case.
Sorry, it was called Modern Family. My producer just corrected me.
Oh, yeah.
But and the same, of course, is true in most of the comedies that are on the big screen and so forth. But when you do find a true comedy that goes back, harkens back to Chaplin or Harold Lloyd or Jackie Gleason or George Burns, and we could go on. I mean,
well, what about Mel Brooks? He used to take jabs at the demographic group, but he never did it with the meanness of intent. Okay, he never directly insulted people. He played off of stereotypes and whatnot, but it was all innocent, good fun.
You laugh out loud at Young Frankenstein, at Blazing Saddles, and on and on and on. And like you say, I mean,
it's an airplane.
He has a way of cracking jokes about people or themes that make you laugh at yourself, which is healthy. But he does it without making you feel bad about yourself or doubting your basic worldview.
He was not driven by hate. He was driven by a clear sense of wanting to make people happy and to laugh. These other people, they're vicious. And it's just like Bill Maher is the worst of them. We wrote again this week to Richard Plepler over at HBO. We had a petition signed by thousands and thousands of people. We sent him in November. And Maher takes a break over Christmas. He's right back in again making comments about Priest that he would not make about anybody else. And as I wrote to him this week, listen, since you want to cast Priest as pedophiles, you ought to at least get it straight. Almost all, 81%. Of the problem with the Priest, which happened between 65 and 85, by the way, people, not of recent vintage, they were homosexuals. And, you know, if I'm the last person standing, I'm simply going to tell the truth about it. Less than 5% of them were ever pedophiles. It's all a lie. How do I know? Because I can read. The John Jay report on this settled the matter. Even if they themselves at the end say, well, we don't want to, even though we know it's all mostly homosexuals, we really can't say that homosexuality didn't work because a lot of
people were at the same meeting, press conference.
Homosexuals. I wouldn't care if he calls himself a chimpanzee.
Yeah,
a man has sex with an adult man. What else would you call it?
The kind of motivation that we're seeing here, and I think what our listeners really should take away from this interview is, as much as anything, you got to believe that these people in power really hate us. They really want to destroy our religion. They really want to destroy the moral teaching. I mean, they really do, folks. They're not kidding around. And we wouldn't be seeing this kind of programming on TV, these kind of films, or this kind of off-Broadway musical if people weren't serious. They're not trying to just get laughs. They're not just trying to make money because things like this don't make money. It needs public funding to survive, right? They want to shape the culture, and they want to shape the minds of young people, most of all.
And quite frankly, if people have any speculation as to what would society look like if you had moral anarchy, well, two things are likely to happen. You're going to, first of all, wind up at the kind of moral destitution, which is why so many people die of drugs and sexually transmitted diseases and the like, and crime. It all occurs when there's a collapse of the ability to govern ourselves, which does exist, it's God-given, but you refuse to do so, you wind up like this. And quite frankly, if you wind up with too high a level of it, at some point, you turn into a police state, because people, as Aristotle and Plato understood, people will never put up with a permanent state of anarchy. They will beg for the heavy hand of the state to come in and install order. I don't want anarchy, and I don't want tyranny, which is why I want some semblance of some modicum of civility in our society. These people are out to assault it, and the ultimate losers will be those people at the bottom of our society. That's the way it always works.
Bill, Donahue, one way this may work out is that Donald Trump gets your letter. He sees it. He knows you. He called you on the phone once, and thank you. You told me that.
Well, he's written about some of my commentary. It was a while ago.
And what if he gets this letter and says, oh, this is one more good reason just to eliminate the National Endowment for the Arts?
Well, look, I'm all in favor of that. We shouldn't be subsidizing the leisure of the rich anyway. But my point is this. We just lost that battle. He just lost that battle. The House and the Senate were able to override him, and they installed the funding. The reason I'm asking for the change of at the Guard is because the change of the Guard is coming up. He's going to soon appoint, nominate, it has to be approved by the Senate, his selection as the new chairman of the NEA. Yeah, I'd love to have somebody like you in there. But if we don't pressure him on this and tell him why, about what the NEA is doing funding the new group, which is indirectly funding Jerry Springer the Opera, we may not get what we want. But this one's coming right up. We're going to get a new chairman starting April the 12th. So let's get what we can at this point, and then we can press on and trying to get more.
But we need a chairman.
We can't get an improvement at the top.
We need a chairman who's willing to sit down with his staff, you know, those who are really entrenched there, who are paid civil servants. They're not political appointees. And you know, without even going there and taking a head count, that probably most of the staff there are far left.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I don't want to. There's good people there. I know that because some of them used to work for me. But the fact is that he's got to sit down with his staff and say, this is what you can do and this is what you can't do. And then he's got to watch, he or she, by the way, has got to watch every grant that the NEA allows and have veto power.
Well, they've got to do a better job of vetting these kinds of things. And, you know, I was asked by one reporter a couple of years back, what do you Catholics want? I said, here's very simple. Just think of us as Native Americans. How's that? So in other words, if you're assessing a grant and it deals with something which could be considered, you know, could be considered anti-Christian, anti-Catholic, well, just instead of Catholic, insert the name Muslim or Jew or Black or Hispanic or homosexual or whatever. And say, well, would it offend them? If the answer is yes, then why don't you treat us with the same degree of respect that you treat the protected classes in our society? It's really not that difficult a thing to do. And I think that President Trump, if we can get to him on this, will do the right thing. And the timing is perfect right now for him to do so. And, yeah, you've got to sit down and discuss this with these people. It's unfortunate that it has to be done. But clearly, anybody who's motivated by hate doesn't belong in public service at any level, local, state, or federal.
The hope that I have, Bill, is that our listeners here and members of the Catholic League and those who follow you, you know, run into the hundreds of thousands, you're going to be on Raymond Arroyo's show, EWTN, tomorrow night, that they will actually start posting your press release from yesterday, your letter to the president, maybe even fax that letter, you know, to the White House. And I'm going to put that letter up on my personal Facebook page, D.O. Wyatt Hudson, with the fax number of the White House, and people can just get it from there and then fax it on. But I think that we have enough time between now and April to really raise public awareness.
Obama nominated his choice as Dr. Chu on February the 12th 4 years ago, and then on April the 12th was cleared.
So it might be sooner than we think.
Yeah, exactly. His choice will be made, assumedly in the next 30 to 45 days. Then have to go through the procedure with the Senate, and then that person will take over on April the 12th. So that's one of the reasons I held a press conference yesterday with you and Ralph and Brent, is because time is of the essence. And yes, I'm concerned about funding. that battle was not won by the president. This is one we can win,
okay,
because he's the one who selects and nominates the next chairman, and that's coming up right away.
I've been talking to my friend, Bill Donahue, president of the Catholic League. Bill, thanks for being a guest today.
Yes, and full disclosure, Dale Hudson is on the board of directors of the Catholic League. I'm proud to have him on there. We're friends, and he does magnificent work.
I'm proud of being on your board. I'd like our listeners to get out there and really raise awareness of this issue of who is going to be the new leader of the National Endowment for the Arts. It's very important to our country and especially to our faith. To all of you listening, be a brief break. Come back with another great guest.